Yes, sir. Joined by Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. Wade, it's MLK Day, baby. There's a lot of people out there celebrating, rightfully so. Be safe. Be safe. Make the memories with your friends and your families. Enjoy the day, but be safe if you don't mind out there, baby. Over off Kirby, a lot of movement. Texan Senior Vice President Chris Olsen, he is out. He is out. One more time, Mr. President. That's right. He is out. For those that aren't I guess, well-schooled on the inner workings of the Houston Texans front office, Chris Olsen was the VP of football operations, specifically, I guess, officially. But he's a primary negotiator in the organization. Pretty simple to put it that way. He's one of the best in the business of managing a salary cap and negotiating contracts. He's been with the Texans for 13 years. In fact, after Brian Gain was fired in June, Olsen was I guess on an interim basis, he was running football ops. He worked J.J. Watt's $100 million contract a few years back. And when it's all said and done, Wade, is he left this football team in a pretty good position, sitting at roughly $60 million in salary cap space heading into this 2020 offseason, an offseason in which the Texans – They've got to take the next step. They've got to do it in a little unique manner because they don't have a first round pick. They don't have a first and second in 2021. So they've got I think when you look down the pipeline for the Houston Texans, they've got a little different approach moving forward that's going to really consist of a lot of contract negotiations, a lot of manipulating the salary cap to make things work. The timing of this, Wade, is a little bit interesting to me.
It should be because, I mean, okay, first of all, Chris Olsen was damn good at his job.
Yeah.
Anytime somebody is damn good at their job and they get let go, that raises eyebrows. It makes you second guess. It makes you looking like, hey, what the hell is going on over here? But then when you really think about it, you say, all right, you know, Bill O'Brien is in a position now that he can dictate and determine who's going to help him make decisions on a day in and day out basis on the front office level. When he first got to the organization, of course, he's the head coach. He gets to determine which players are going to be there or which players are going to play and then which coaches are going to be on his staff. He has total autonomy of like, hey, my coaching staff is my coaching staff. So now it just moves up to another level. Now, you know, I get to determine which guys that I want to be here helping me to make decisions on a day in and day out basis. And apparently – they weren't on the same page. And so if you're not on the same page with what he has going on over there, you got to go. Now, sometimes that's going to work out in the good and sometimes it's going to work out in the bad. A guy like Chris Olsen, to me, you don't let a guy like that go unless it's an issue where we're just not on the same page because he is damn good at his job. So did the Texans get better today? I'm going to say no. I mean, it's from that aspect because they have people that – I mean, Chris Olsen's relationship that he has with different agents, the relationship that he has throughout the league and front office circles, that means something. You know what I mean? And so now you have to kind of recalibrate how you're going to approach each of these free agents that are coming up. You got some big time deals that have to be done and set up. And so I will say this, if you're not on the same page with somebody, it's better to do it now than wait till later and to prolong it. You know what I mean? Yeah. Bill O'Brien has got himself in a position now within the organization that he can determine who's going to be helping him make these decisions on the front office level. So, hey, let's not mess around with it. Let's move forward with somebody that's one of his guys. Now, is it going to work out for good? Who the hell knows? But I do know that losing Chris Olsen, that hurts the organization, especially in the short term.
Wade, what about how do you – this is the hard part for me to wrap my head around. And how do you go and you negotiate – a deal for Whitney Mercilus, what was it, a month ago?
Yeah.
Or 2 months ago?
Within weeks. It was probably four weeks ago.
Okay. I mean, how do you as an organization, when you're known to be an organization that does not negotiate and re-up and extend in season, how do you make that move, pay Whitney $13 million a year? Some will say it was an aggressive move. I think the market will tell us that 2 months from now, 3 months from now, 4 months from now, when you start seeing guys sign and extend in 2020, I think it'll all make more sense. But nonetheless, how do you make that kind of move with that kind of money, with that caliber player, and then 6 weeks down the road or 2 months down the road, however long, whatever the timeline may be, how do you fire the guy that's responsible for negotiating those types of contracts specifically?
So, listen, I think that we're putting too much weight into Whitney Merciless' contract and what it means in the long term and big picture. The way the salary cap is set up and the way that the thing about it right now, there are $60 million under the cap. And there's a new CBA coming up within a year. The salary cap is going to go up so high.
I heard contract 15% way. That's which is a boatload of money when you're talking.
I'd have to look back at the number that I saw before. I don't got it in front of me, but it was like it's gone up. I think 65% since 2011.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's gone up $76 million.
I meant from last year to this year.
But listen, I'm saying that to say this. That's 2011 was when the new CBA was signed.
Right.
So it went up 76 years over the lifespan of the CBA. Now you're about to get another one in 2021. Right now, 2020 is coming up. That's the last year. Then you're going to have a new CBA. The TV numbers and the TV numbers are going up with the NFL. That means that those numbers are going to translate to real dollars and cents in the salary cap. So to me, when I hear Whitney Merciless is getting paid as a top 10 linebacker, it's like, so what? That's today.
I agree
100%. That's today.
I agree.
2 years from now, you're going to look at it like we got a good-ass deal for Whitney Merciless.
Right.
Because the numbers are going to go up so high that you're going to be like, well, that's really not a bad deal. The reason why Chris Olsen is not with the Texans is not because he did or did not negotiate that deal. It has to be because philosophically how they got to that deal or how they're going to get to deals going forward, they're not on the same page as that. The way they want to approach getting deals done, the way they want to do those things, if they were on the same page with that, he'd still be here because he's good at his job. So to me, that Whitney Merciless contract, that's not a reason to say, well, you paid him so much money, now you're not going to have enough money to play X, Y, and Z.
Yeah.
I don't believe that.
Forget the value behind it. I'm just talking about going through the process with a guy. I don't care who he is. Going through the process with the guy a month ago.
He's good at his job.
I understand that. They're all good at their job. But I'm talking
about.
No,
that's not true.
My point is, they all are. If you're employed by an NFL team negotiating contracts, you're pretty damn good at your job, relatively speaking. My point was just a way to like, if you know, how do you go from letting him negotiate a contract, regardless of who it is, to going, you know what, we're going to go a different direction a month later? That's my point is like, how do you think that lines up?
I don't think it's a big deal at all. You know what I mean? The big deal is the philosophical change in what's going to go on over there because Chris Olsen has showed you year in, year out that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
So now you're taking somebody that knew what they're doing and taking them out of the fold, and you're putting somebody else that's going to be in the fold that you don't know what you're going to get out of them. That's the part that shows you concern. The fact that the move was actually made of like a month ago you did Whitney. That's what I'm saying. Whitney Merciless, it doesn't move the needle. If you would have told me he negotiated Deshaun Watson's contract I'm trying to figure out a way to explain it to you to where, like, I don't think it moves the needle to where your concern should be based off the fact that Whitney got a deal done and now you're going forward and now you're not going to have – now you have to get somebody new to do Deshaun and to do Tunsil.
Yeah, it's less about Whitney and that than it is about, like, why let a guy work and negotiate a contract when you know you're going to fire him 4 weeks later. I mean, that's my point of why not
– I would say, why is Romeo Crennel coaching in the playoffs when you know that you're going to probably move on in the offseason anyway? It's the same thing. If you're under contract and you're working for organization – you're going to let the person do their job. You know what I mean? Like, I'm sure he's been working on the contract with me all year over the past couple of years. You're going to let him finish that job. That's why I'm saying that the Whitney contract doesn't move the needle enough to where, like, if there's somebody within the organization that you don't think does a good job, you're going to say, I'm not going to let him work on this deal. This deal is so important. This is a significant deal. So we're just going to move him to the wayside and let somebody else handle this. I don't see that as a situation at all. I think it has to do with philosophically going forward, the type of players that they pay, who they want to go after. I'm sure Chris Olsen has his own opinion on, like, this is a guy that we should pay X. This, they might say, you know, the people that are still in place, we want to pay that guy Y, and he's got to make it work. And if he can't make it work, they're going to find somebody else that can. You know what I mean? And so I think that's where it's coming from.
To your point, I mean, the Texans are in a position where, having given up the draft capital that they gave up, I would think that they've got to go a little different direction in negotiating contracts moving forward without those draft picks. It's got to affect them in some way, shape, or form, right?
Yeah, that's got to affect them, that the draft picks are changed. Everything that they're doing now, you have to remember, you're basing it off of a decision maker or offseason that happened in the past that apparently Bill O'Brien didn't agree with. The fact that Brian Gaine didn't bring in a lot of guys in free agency that year, and I can't remember all the moves that went through, but we went through them back then and talked about them, where Brian Gaine had an opportunity to bring in Soldier. He had an opportunity to bring in Trent Brown, and it didn't happen. There was opportunities for trades to be made during the draft, and none of that happened. He just focused on the draft, and he brought in some good draft picks. So you got to give Brian Gaine for credit for that. But apparently that wasn't enough for Bill O'Brien, what he wants out of the person in that position. So now he's doing it himself. You know what I mean? But you don't know what type of role Chris Olsen played in that as well, as far as bringing back Tyrann Mathieu. Like, a deal that he says is reasonable to have for Tyrann, he might say, you know what, between him and Brian Gaine, they might say, listen, I know you really want Ty Mathieu to be here, but it's not reasonable for us to give him X amount of dollars. And so because of that, you got to remember, back then, Brian Gaine was the GM, and so he's gone. So Bill O'Brien might say, you know what, I want somebody in here that's going to understand where I'm coming from and get the thing done for me.
Yeah.
And so that's what you're going to have going forward. Everybody that's there in the building is not going to be holdovers, not going to be anybody to – hold him back from doing ultimately what he wants to get done.
Yeah, there's one more star that's lined up with my man Bill O'Brien at this point in time, right? Whoever that hire be, it's going to be a Bill O'Brien guy. Houston, today we celebrate the life and legacy of Dr. Martin Luther King. MLK Day it is. Wade, I know you've had some great get-togethers, some great memories, and I know that Dr. Martin Luther King obviously means a lot to you. As a young fella growing up.
Oh, no question about it. Like, listen, I wouldn't be able to talk to you guys on the air right now if it wasn't for him. It wasn't for people like him. I think this is a day to honor and remember all the things that he's brought to the table as far as civil rights in this country, and to remember and lean upon some of his teachings, because a lot of it still applies to this day. And so anytime you have opportunity to reflect back on that and remember the teachings of a person like Dr. Martin Luther King, you have to do that. And so I'm glad to have the opportunity to do that myself right now.
That's 12-year vet, 12-year NFL vet, Wade Smith. Up next, we got my man Ron, the show Hughley, who was in studio Thursday and Friday with me last week. Them Kansas City Chiefs, man, they went and won a big one. They're on their way to the Super Bowl. We're going to talk to him a little bit about that. We'll do that next on Sports Radio 610. I'm Clint Sterner. I'm joined by my man Wade Smith, 12-year NFL vet. Yeah, we've been known to get there every now and then. My man B-Max behind the glass joining us out of Kansas City. My man Ron, the show Hughley. Ron, it's been a couple of days since I seen you, my man. How you doing?
I'm good, man. I'm good. The city around here is crazy. People shooting guns like it's celebration. It's going down out here.
Look, man. Hey, look. The Kansas City Chiefs come out, another slow start, just out of the gate, but they're obviously able to overcome with the firepower that they have, man. What's your quick rundown of what you saw Sunday?
Well, that's exactly what I told you what was going to happen last week, and you didn't want to listen.
Go.
Oh, no, don't do that. You didn't want to listen.
I told you so, guys.
Because you said, wait, Derrick Henry, that man's a beast. What did I tell you? As soon as the Chiefs go up two scores, we'll see how many times you can use Derrick Henry. And what happened? The Chiefs went up two scores, and how many times? With a full quarter left, how many times did Derrick Henry touch the ball? Once. Zero carries, a screen pass that went for no yards. They couldn't give him the ball once it went up two scores, and it became a Ryan Tannehill game, and that is good night. And let me tell you, Patrick Mahomes was something special. I mean, that run, I know you probably had flashbacks. That run was something else, man. It got me out of my seat, the whole press box. You know you're not supposed to cheer in the press box, but everybody was just oohs and ahs and trying to hold it down. But, yeah, man, I told you it was going to happen. I told you exactly what was going to happen one day. You listen to me. I told you exactly what happened. You know about it, Wade. He don't listen. One day I told you it was going to happen, and it happened exactly the way I said it would.
Now, Ron, I agree with you that, you know, the Chiefs got a two-touchdown lead, and so, of course, you're saying that they're not going to run Henry at that point. But the first time the Titans played the Chiefs, they got in the same situation. They did keep running Henry. So this is not – I know you were right in this case, and it was an I told you so, but that's you point the finger at the coaches of the Titans for not sticking with their game plan, not because you couldn't run Derrick Henry because he had done it before and they had won. The problem with both of the teams that lost to the Kansas City Chiefs in the playoffs at Arrowhead was because the coaches didn't stick to their game plans, and both times it cost them. And now, of course, Kansas City is going to the Super Bowl because of it.
Well, Wade, the first game, Jesus appeared for the Tennessee Titans and allowed a whole bunch of stuff to just happen that didn't make sense, like blocked field goals and fumbles for touchdowns and dropped touchdown passes. There were just so many crazy, ridiculous things that occurred that allowed the Titans to get back. And I get you. They kept running down 29-20 in the first game in the third quarter. They kept running. But I'm telling you, it's a different thing, man. When you get in there, you're in Arrowhead, and then it was clear, just like it was last week against Houston. It was clear, well, we're not stopping these jokers. And we cannot allow to have a 5 or 6 minute drive because that's going to be the game because we're not stopping them. And you get into your head even as a coach, and it's just like, good God, man, these jokers are scoring it any way you want to. And normally the Chiefs don't run the ball well. Hell, in the third quarter, they started running the ball well. And it was like, now they're taking time off the clock. We know Pat can just hit somebody, Tyreek, Sammy, Travis, anytime he wants. Like, it just messes with your head when you're actually in it. Maybe one game, the first time, they were able to pull it off. But this one, nah, man, you could just see it. You could feel the crowd and the energy was picking up, and this team feeds off their crowd and gets energy offensively and defensively. Where it just didn't matter. Like I just when they went down, you could see it in Vrabel's head, man. We can't have long drives, or this sucker's going to be over.
Ron, the show Ugly, joining us on Sports Radio 610, Houston Sports Leader. Ron, there's no doubt about it, man. Either way you slice it, however they got there, Kansas City Chiefs are healthy. They're rocking and rolling, and they have the ability to apply pressure in a way that not many offenses, at least in the recent past. Not many offenses have been able to do. There's been some good ones, but the way that these guys can apply pressure and flip the script in a matter of minutes is impressive. How do you think these guys stack up against the San Francisco 49ers, who you watched in the late game yesterday, dominate just as impressively versus Green Bay as Kansas City was able to dominate versus the Tennessee Titans? How do you see that game matching up, that Super Bowl matching up in 2 weeks?
You remember last week I told you how confident I felt about the Chiefs against the Titans. I think they were a horrible matchup for them. I ain't saying that now, baby. That defensive line for the San Francisco 49ers is going to be a problem. When they roll out Bosa, Ford, Armstead, Buckner, that linebacking corps, that's going to be a problem. Because you all know, Wade, you played the game. Clint, you played the game. Man, the way you get at a quarterback is putting pressure on him. And that has been the times when Patrick Mahomes has looked normal, I guess. And the Chiefs do not have a great offensive line. Eric Fisher can't be had. Mitchell Schwartz is their best offensive lineman. But D. Ford coming off the edge and Nick Bosa, when they swing them around, they're going to be problems. And the Chiefs can't run it, and they're going to have to throw it. And they're dropping back. That defensive line can absolutely ruin the game. I have major concerns for the Chiefs in terms of that. Now, Jimmy Garoppolo's got to throw the damn thing more than six times. I believe that, and that's going to be something. The Chiefs are going to want to put the ball game in Jimmy Garoppolo's hands. Very similar to what they did with Ryan Tannehill. It took longer than I expected, but they're going to want to try to put the game in their hands because they can run it, and the Chiefs can be had running the football if teams are allowed to. Like, if the game played in a way where Derrick Henry could get carries, I think he would have gotten yards in the second half. I think the same way with the Niners. I don't feel as confident for the Chiefs in this game because that defensive line can absolutely ruin the game, and their offensive line could take control and take their manhood away. Baby, you saw what they did to the Packers. That was absolutely ridiculous. They just couldn't stop them whatsoever. So my thoughts for this game is much different in terms of the Chiefs winning.
Seeing some of the stunting and slanting that the Kansas City Chiefs did against the Tennessee Titans to slow down that running game, does that give you any more confidence going against a rushing game attack like the San Francisco 49ers?
Yeah, I mean, they're better, especially you get Chris Jones to get another 2 weeks because he wasn't healthy with the calf injury. You get him up, Mike Pinnell, a guy up front who has been a real asset here in the second half of the season. The Chiefs are better. But they're not like great. All right, they can still, if you keep giving them the ability to have to be able to run the ball, they can be had. But they need what Clint said. They need the Chiefs offense to dictate this game. They need the Chiefs offense to dictate the game where they can't just hand the thing off. And Jimmy Garoppolo has to be a part of it. And if Jimmy Garoppolo has to be a part of it, then you bring in Chris Jones. Frank Clark is playing at a different level. They've got some pass rushers up there, and their secondary has been the strongest part of their team this year, even better than the defensive line. But that's what they have to do. The Chiefs' offense have to help dictate this game just like they did against the Titans.
Ron, I want to switch gears real quick, man. You were in studio here with me for 2 days last week, so you're familiar with what's going on with the Texans. They announced this morning that Chris Olsen, their VP of football operations, essentially their negotiator of all contracts and salary cap issues in the offseason. Strange timing to make that move, but they did. You've been through a lot of changes and stuff like that over your career of covering the NFL. You know, just off the cuff, man, what does that signal to you about this Texans organization moving forward?
I just would want to know, does this mean anything towards the power that Bill O'Brien has, right? Because what it reminds me of is a lot of what I saw here in Kansas City, what you see in Oakland, now Las Vegas, is, all right, there's some moving parts. You know, the Raiders bring in Mike Mayock, and the Chiefs bring in Brett Veach. But in those situations, we knew how much power and where the buck stopped. All right, Brett Veach isn't making any big-time decisions without it going through Andy Reid. There may be some suggestions, but he's not making any big-time decisions. To me, you feel comfortable if Andy Reid is your guy making big-time decisions because he's got a track record. I'm not certain how people feel in Houston about that confidence under Bill O'Brien. So I wonder, does this move make them equal parts, or is Bill O'Brien still kind of in power over this?
Yeah, you know, I think that's the biggest questions at a time. And again, you know the temperature of the city. I mean, at a time last week when we were sitting here going, how does this affect the head coach's hot seat or not? And then we wake up this morning, and it's obvious that his power is growing within the organization, and moves are being made, man. So Romeo Crennel also let go, age 73. Anthony Weaver hired from inside the organization as the defensive coordinator. We suspect that's a pretty dang good move. And we'll see. I mean, obviously the jury's out. But, hey, Ron, man, Ron, the show, Ugly, man, appreciate you joining us, brother. I hope you have a blessed day. I hope you have a safe Martin Luther King Day and you celebrate to the fullest with your family.
You too. And Wade, appreciate jumping on with you as well. And, Clint, all you got to do is listen to me, baby. I got you,
man. Hey, be good, brother. I tell you what, man. I knew he was going to have one of them "Oh, I told you so's" for me.
That's the worst thing in sports, man, when you got to listen to somebody tell you "I told you so." That's why people are so mad at the damn Texans for that KC collapse, because it's like, now you got to hear people say "I told you so."
That's
I told
right.
you was gonna come
That's
back.
Right.
I told you that was gonna happen. It's the worst part of being a fan of sports teams.
Wade, with Chris Olsen out in the front office, man, I want to throw you a little curveball here. One thing we didn't get to a couple segments ago, but with Chris Olsen out in the front office, chief negotiator essentially for contracts and salary caps, I want to see. I want to touch on how this affects two huge contracts that have to be negotiated sooner rather than later. For this football team, for this franchise, this Texans franchise. We'll discuss that and more next right here on Sports Radio 610. And Wade Smith, former Houston Texans offensive lineman. Wade, Chris Olsen, VP of football operations, chief negotiator with the Houston Texans. essentially the guy that's responsible for salary cap manipulation. Maybe that's a good way to couch it.
Yeah.
Contract negotiations, man. He's out. He's out. And the minute that I hear that, Wade, we talked a little earlier about, you know, the Whitney Mercilus deal a month ago, and boom, he's out all of a sudden a month later. Let's look forward down that pipeline, and I can't help but think about the fact that Deshaun Watson is the next guy up. Laremy Tunsil, he's the next guy up. Those guys have to be priority for the Houston Texans now, right? I mean, I'm guessing. I mean, I don't think this is – I mean, those conversations between Deshaun Watson's representation, his agent, Laremy Tunsil's agent, those conversations, I would think, have been well in the works up to this point. Do they take a halt? Do they pause now, or do they continue forward with somebody else in the organization? How do you see that working out? How big of a deal is that that Laremy Tunsil and Deshaun Watson are right in the middle of re-upping, and or I guess not re-upping, but of extending their contract? Wait, these are the two biggest deals that I would say have been worked on, maybe outside of J.J. Watt, and I would say they're bigger than J.J. Watt because of the timing, all the stars that are in line right now, the success that this team is essentially closer to having than when J.J. Watt's deal was worked out. But this is big, man. I mean, the timing of this could be a little bit interesting.
Yeah, I mean, Laremy Tunsil is going to be a guy, and I know that he's going to be one of the guys that's first one up. Laremy and Zach, I think, will get done before Deshaun
Zach
Watson
Cunningham.
Is done. Yeah, Zach yeah. Cunningham. So those two guys are going to get deals done. Now, the fact that Chris Olsen is out, that means that the conversations are going to have to be recalibrated between whoever the person that they put in that spot, because they haven't named anybody to be in Chris Olsen's role. It just happened today. But the agent for all of these guys and whoever that person that is the chief negotiator, they're going to have to start not from scratch. They'll have a baseline of what they started at before, but there might be a new direction, a new vision on how they want to approach getting the deal done. So that's going to take time for them to rework everything out. So that, I think that might push some things back. Or it might be a scenario where it's like, you know what, we want to get this done regardless, so let's get it done now. All of that stuff is based off of the direction that Bill O'Brien wants to go in. And that's the part I think people are failing to understand the role of Chris Olsen. Chris Olsen's job was to negotiate the deal. He's supposed to get the vision of the decision makers in the organization, because he's been here through multiple head coaches, multiple GMs. So he gets the vision of the GM, and based off of the budget that is put in place, and says, all right, now let's get these deals done with these certain players based off of this amount of money that we have to work with, and make sure you put a contract together that is works out in the best interest of this franchise. He is not the one that says, yeah, I don't want to pay that guy. He's not the one that says, you know, I don't want to pay Clowney, so trade him away, because I don't want we've been negotiating, and I don't like the negotiators, or I don't like the agent, so get rid of him. Let's get somebody else. He doesn't do that. He gets charged with, hey, This is what we want to pay Jadeveon, right? We want to pay him X amount of dollars. We want to fit him in this slot. Now I need you to negotiate with him and try to get him to this number. If you can't get to that number, it's like you come back to him and say, hey, I tried. We try to finesse it every we could, but we couldn't get it done. So then, all right, now the decision makers say, okay, now we need to move him. That's not Chris Olsen's deal. I've been seeing people say stuff like that on Twitter and Facebook and the text line, like Chris Olsen is the reason why. He's a negotiator. So if you bring in somebody else new to do that, now he's going to be the one that communicates the approach of how they want to get these deals done with these players.
I read an article earlier today, Wade, and it's so, I mean, there's no way to even make it make sense over the air. But I mean, it was very telling relative to, you spoke earlier about different philosophies of a negotiator, different philosophies of a VP of football operations, whoever manipulates the salary cap to make it work the best for what they have in house and what they have coming down the pipe. There's more options, or there's more ways to manipulate a salary cap than I thought. I mean, when you're talking about Deshaun Watson and Laremy Tunsil, really, let's be honest. When you're talking about Deshaun Watson type of money, you're talking about a $190 million contract over 5 years.
Yeah.
And so It's going to be, no, it'd be over 4 years, right?
I think it'd be over 5 years.
Nonetheless, it's going to be a boatload of money, a good chunk of the yearly salary cap. And so the way that you can structure that thing would be, would affect who you can and can't sign. And anyway, the point is that this was his job had nothing to do with who was or wasn't going to be here. It was manipulating those and negotiating those contracts to make it all make sense for the head coach.
Yeah, because whoever is making decisions on personnel, there's certain guys that they want to keep and there's certain guys that they would like to keep. Like, there's certain guys that say, we're keeping this guy, figure out a way to get it done, and then we're going to work off of that to determine how many guys we can keep that we want to keep. But if they have to go, hey, we can go into a different direction. That's what Chris Olsen's job was to do, to make the best contracts. If you look back in the history of the Texans organization, they don't do bad contracts. There's been some bad players that came in here and didn't live up to. Think about like Brock Osweiler. Brock Osweiler came in here. He got paid, I think it was $37 million guaranteed or whatever it was. Yeah. But in the grand scheme of things, that's not a lot of money. If you're a franchise quarterback in the league, you actually got a discount there, and then you were able to trade him away because the deal was friendly enough or palatable enough to a different organization that they would go ahead and accept that deal. If it was a bad deal, people wouldn't trade. They'd be like, hell no, this kid, I'm not going to take him onto our books. And so it's Olsen's job to make sure the deals that you make are friendly for the Texans organization. And so that's what he did. And whoever else comes in here is going to have to do the same thing. The thing that you are concerned about, and the thing that you also could be excited about, could be the exact same thing. You could be concerned because you say, well, this guy's been fiscally responsible for the past 13 years. And so we might bring somebody in here that says, you know what? The hell with being fiscally responsible. I want these guys in the building, so let's pay them. There's a way that you can pay everybody.
Yeah, that's what people
need to understand. There is a way that you can work the numbers to pay everybody, but 4 or 5 years down the road, you're going to be looking crazy because you don't have any picks, you don't have any money to operate with, and you're going to be cash strapped, and you're going to be in a bad situation. So, but that could excite you because maybe you bring in so many good players that you can take it to the next level and actually win a championship. That's what you have to constantly fight back and forth with, is like, all right, are we paying the right guys? How much are we paying the right guys? Are we paying the wrong guys? All these things work into Chris Olsen's job, the GM's job, all the people over there at the front office for the Houston Texans.
Well, for right now, Bill O'Brien is also the VP of football operations until they hire somebody else in. You can add that to his list of jobs. So wait, I mean, what about? Because when I was coming in and I was listening to Lock Dog, I was listening to Lopez, and I heard them. They were referring to Deshaun Watson specifically about his extension and whether he would play in the fourth year or not. I guess Landry said he could hold out if he wanted to. I immediately start thinking Mahomes and Deshaun Watson, like, do those guys take the field without an extension in place next year?
I mean, Deshaun Watson doesn't strike me as the type of guy that's going to hold out from his team. He's the type of guy that might – think about Russell Wilson. Remember Russell Wilson? I think this was this past offseason, he was saying, like, if I don't get a deal done by X amount of time, I'm not coming to training camp. And everybody was looking like, is Russell really going to do it?
Right.
But eventually they got a deal done. When you have quarterbacks that are of that stature, you pay them when they want to get paid. Now, when they decide to press that button – is up to that goes into the negotiations with the agent and the contract,
right,
and the organization.
Yeah.
Like, if you have a good relationship, you understand, listen, you're going to get paid a boatload of money.
Yeah.
But for our team, for our organization, for you to get the pieces around you to help you be the best, we need to do it at time A and not necessarily time B. You know what I mean? And so maybe that, and if he's good with that, if he understands that, then you can delay it another year. But from his perspective, the longer he waits, the more he gets paid. The quicker you get a deal done, the quicker you're going to have to come back to the table to get market value once your deal is about three or 4 years into it, because the salary cap money is going to go up so high that you're going to look at, oh, this is a good deal right now. Russell Wilson's deal was a great deal All the way up until the time he said, all right, now y'all need to pay me some more money because I'm looking at Jared Goff and all these guys getting this money like that, and I'm arguably the best quarterback in the league.
Yeah, and to be clear, the In the Loop guys weren't saying one way or another. They were just having the conversation of how does this affect the extension of Deshaun Watson and what he could possibly do. It just made me immediately think all the conversation I've heard is who gets the new contract first this offseason? Who gets the extension first this offseason, Mahomes or Deshaun Watson? And so that when they were talking about it in my mind, wait, I'm like, well, what if Deshaun doesn't get the extension? I just can't think if I were in Deshaun. I get what your point of like every if it's a year from now that you sign the big deal, it's going to be beyond Mahomes' deal, and I get that. But man, I just couldn't see taking the field and risking my health and the without guaranteed money being on the table.
I find it hard to believe that he would hold out. I mean, if he were to hold out, I would find it hard to believe that it would ever get to that point. To where their relationship wasn't good enough to where he understood that, hey, I'm going to get paid regardless, and so I can wait to midway through that season. But there's no reason for them to have to wait to pay Deshaun Watson. That's, I think, the point that we're not really talking about right now is there's no reason for them to have to wait. If they're waiting, it's because they want to wait, and Deshaun is okay with them waiting.
So you don't think the chief negotiator in the organization – we'll set that back at all. If they want to get it done, they'll be able to get that thing done sooner rather than later.
If Bill O'Brien wants Deshaun Watson to be the starting quarterback of this organization for years to come, they'll get a deal done when Deshaun needs the deal to get done.
Whenever his
you understand
reps,
what I'm
yeah,
saying?
Whenever his reps like
when,
say,
when,
I want
when
it
they're
done.
Like, hey, we need to get this done by this certain period, then that's when they'll get it done. If they're not pressing it, then Bill O'Brien's not going to press it because it gives him more flexibility now. If you can wait till later, you know what I mean? That's why the relationship aspect is so big. If a quarterback is willing to wait, then if you need to wait as an organization, then you wait. But they don't need to wait. They got $60 million under the cap, and they're going to be getting more as time goes forward. Take care of them now, but do understand that 4 years from now, things go how they're supposed to go. You know, you might extend them 5 years, but probably year three, he's going to want to get another extension because he's going to be underpaid by that point. That's just the way the NFL works.
I'm getting my bread ASAP. Now I may consider doing a little team friendly deal. Like I think Tom Brady's now. It's easy for him to say when he's married to a gal that makes more money than him, but it's genius to allow. If I'm a quarterback and somebody goes, "Hey man, I can pay you a record amount of money, but if I can keep a little bit of it, I can guarantee you got Hopkins the rest of your career or as long as he's playing." Or and I'm just using that as an example. Yeah. Or Tunsil, man, if you give us a little bit of breathing room, you can keep Tunsil for the rest of your career. Hey, I'm going to think about that. I'm going to get my reps here and say, hey, man, look, I know I'm going to let you do your job, but I want you to at least consider my backside, literally and figuratively, when you're thinking about this contract. Wait, the Rockets, man. The Rockets are in trouble. And I know you're looking at me going, man, you told me 2 weeks ago that you didn't see any problems, and you're right, I did. But I'm here to tell you, this ain't got nothing to do with chemistry. Nothing to do with chemistry at all. I'm concerned when I saw them up against the L.A. Lakers.
Yeah.
When I saw them up against the L.A. Lakers without Anthony Davis, I immediately, as I'm watching the game, I'm going, this is not good. This is not, because even with great chemistry, I don't know that they're going to have answers for that caliber basketball team.
Yeah, personnel wise, they are missing a piece or two in order to compete with the big dogs. They are not there yet. You watch them play against the Lakers. You watch the fact that Anthony Davis was not on the court, and they still. Basically, and they didn't get ran through, but it was you could tell that there was a tier. There's a pecking order that the Lakers are at the top, and the Rockets are a step or two below the Lakers. And so you don't trade for Russell Westbrook in order to be a step or two behind the best in the league. You're doing that because you're trying to take that final step to be an NBA champion. And so they got to figure out a way, and I don't know how because – they really don't have that many assets left. I would love to get some ideas because when you look at it, it's like, man, they've traded away so much. They don't have first-round draft picks. They don't have a lot of wiggle room to get better as a team for this season, but they're going to have to figure out something in order for them to keep compete with the big dogs, because the presence that he brings you down low, his inability to score points in the post, along with his inability to score points from behind the 3-point line.
You're
talking about Clint Capela in the post. Like, without those, that in this today's game in the NBA, you have to be able to do those things to compete with the big dogs. And so he can't do either. And so it's going to hurt the Rockets in a 7-game series against a damn good team like the Lakers or against the Clippers. They're not on that level right now.
Wait, it's a changing of the guard in the NBA that I see. Like I think they are built really well right now to better compete with Golden State of a year ago or of 2 years ago or of 3 years ago with Westbrook instead of Paul.
Yeah.
And a team that plays through their guards.
Yeah.
I think they would be. They're much more equipped to make a run and win a 7-game series versus a team like that. When I watched them versus the Lakers, what you mentioned with Clint Capela not having an, because what happens is when a team has a big below, which I said Anthony Davis is out, but Dwight Howard has resurrected his career in a pretty cool way in L.A. I mean, this guy's he's playing with a lot. Every time I watch him, it's more and more confidence, and he's manning the paint in a big way on the defensive end of the floor, especially versus a guy like Capela. And so what teams can do when he's down low is they can extend to the perimeter. They can do all the double teaming that they want to and really focus on defending the perimeter and not worry at all about Capela hurting them down low. Capella's a monster now on the boards. He's a monster when you're running, when you're pushing the ball down the court. But otherwise, it's – He's a detriment on the offensive end. And so you fast forward to L.A. and LeBron James is handling the rock at the point guard, which was impressive in itself. And they have the ability with Kuzma out, while they have the ability to defend the perimeter in a different way than a lot of teams do. It's a problem inside, man.
Yeah, because the way that the Rockets work is they have to have their 3-point shots hitting for them to compete with the big dogs. If they're off behind the 3-point line, they're not going to be able to compete with those guys. And so the way you alleviate some of that pressure off from him, though, is when you run the pick-and-roll game with a guy like Capela, you can pick-and-roll and he can get oops that way, but he can't pick-and-pop. He doesn't have that part of the game. Most of the teams that are good teams in the league, they'll have two guys that are very – they're skilled. They have similar skill sets. When you run a pick-and-roll with Anthony Davis and LeBron James, what are you going to defend? What are you going to give up as a defense in order to slow that down? They don't have that combination of forces on the Houston Rockets. They need somebody that's the big presence that can actually get to the hole, finish, but also could pick and pop, hit a mid-range jumper, who could pick and pop out behind a 3-point line and shoot a three, kind of like Kristaps in Dallas, Kristaps and Luka. Like, those two guys can both get to the lane and finish. They also can pop and hit a three or pop and hit a mid-range jumper, and so that allows them to always create offense even when their jumpers are off. You know what I mean? The Rockets don't have that kind of combination, and so it shows itself at times. A lot of times, James Harden is such a talented player and he's such a dominant offensive player that it'll mask some of those deficiencies. But when you play against the best teams over a long period of time, over a 7-game series, that's when it shows up, reels his ugly head, and it doesn't allow you to get over the hump to win a championship.
Yeah, it's just, to me, it was an eye-opening game Saturday. Obviously, it's early. When Westbrook was able to do his thing in the first half, they went into halftime. I believe it was a 6-point lead. He was, at one point, he was 8 of 9 from the field. I mean, he was doing his thing. They adjusted a little bit, put Kuzma on him, and shut him down for the most part in the second half, at least in the third quarter, for the Lakers to make a big-time run. But nonetheless, it was just one of those where – watching that game, man, I don't think any degree of chemistry is going to help them overcome what I saw. I hope my eyes were deceiving me. I hope it was just a 1-game issue, but it wasn't. It was tough to watch. Texans making some moves, man. I'm good with the Texans move at DC. I hope it's not. I hope it's not a sign of what's to come on the offensive side of the football. 5 o'clock fire is next, baby. 5 o'clock fire is next.